Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power. Bringing voices to power.
Okay, in this new episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I talk with Kenneth Paschall, State President of the Alabama Family Rights Association. ALFRA, as they are abbreviated, is a nonprofit organization of parents and families working to ensure that children's relationships with each fit parent is safeguarded in all child custody legal proceedings. And they do this through interaction with all three branches of state and federal government. Good afternoon, Mr. Paschall. Tell me how did I do on that name? I always ask my guests how I do on their name. I like pronouncing different names and want to get it right.
Well, Marcus, first, you know, I appreciate you having me on your show today. And my last name
pleasure
is
having
pronounced
you.
Well, thank you. And my last name is pronounced Paschall, but, you know, it's
Paschall.
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of people kind of pronounce it with the H, but it's without the H there. So it's Kenneth
yeah,
Pascal.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
Right.
Okay, tell us a little bit about yourself. First of all, I want to know you are the state president of the Alabama Feminine Rights Association. Tell us what you can about what motivated you into starting or being a part of taking this whole activism thing on, because I deal a lot with activists in all different types of communities, and usually there is a defining moment or a defining situation where you feel like that you have to do something to better a situation.
In 2006, after spending 21 and a half years in the United States Army, I retired, and mainly because we had a newborn. I was going to spend more time, quality time with my daughter. And so I retired from the military, moved back to Alabama in 2006. Went through a divorce in 2008, and I thought they were joking, but they said, you get to see your child first and third weekends, from Friday at 6 to Sunday at 6. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I can see if someone had, had issues. But once again, I just retired from the military, working on a research team with the Birmingham FBI. I say that because I still have a top secret security clearance, so there's no issues. Working with our kids, children's ministry at church, but that doesn't matter in our family courts, as you probably know. So I was looking around trying to search and say, well, someone need to fix this issue. And so I came across the Alabama Family Rights Association, and I attended several meetings of the Huntsville chapter at that time. So I drove from Shelby County to Huntsville to a couple of their meetings. And so I started the Birmingham chapter in 2009, and through that process, I was elected as the state president a couple of years ago. And you're right. Most of the time, when someone is advocating for change, you have been directly impacted. But what our organization is trying to do is encourage, reach out to everyone. You know, if you're not directly impacted, you indirectly impact it, because when you traumatize kids from having one relationship with one of their parents, you're creating a chaos in our communities, in our state, in our nation. So that's pretty much just a short summary. I was directly impacted, and didn't realize I had been indirectly impacted in the entire time, because this is a systemic problem. Where about approximately 40,000 kids in Alabama is torn from either mom or dad. And So this is not really a gender issue. Some people, they try to say it's a gender issue, but this is a social issue as far as kids being court ordered to not to see one of their parents.
Yeah, and we know that from some of the top social scientists and child psychologists got together. It was 112 of them recently, and they all came together. They did a study, and they published a report in the American Psychological Association, the journal. And they all agreed that shared parenting between two fit parents produces the best outcome for children. And I don't think a lot of people understand that people who are not getting the right time or feel like they're not getting the right time with their kids, it affects the kid, like you said. But imagine the mental abuse, the mental hurt that causes, because you go through, it's like going through a sense of loss, like you lost somebody that's still living. And that impacts your whole, when that gets into your head, it impacts your whole psychology on everything, and your body chemistry, because if you're always stressed out about that, it can trickle down to real physical damage in the here and now, and also the damage in the long run to the kid being separated from what is basically and truthfully a part of themselves.
Right. Well, you're right. You run into imbalance. It's similar to driving a car and you take your hands off the steering wheel and it drift to your left and right. That's because there's an imbalance in the tire pressure, and you drift off and you're out of alignment. So currently what's taking place in our state and throughout the country, there's an imbalance in our kids, as mentioned, approximately 40,000 here in Alabama is court ordered to see and to spend time with one of their parents only 4 to 6 days, maybe 8 days at the most per month. So that's an imbalance telling the child that one half of your identity, one half of your DNA, is not important. And here's the impact. You're probably aware of these, what I'm going to share with you, but according to the Alabama DHR, that's the Department of Human Resources, and the United States Department of Health and Human Services, they say 63% of our youth suicides. They say 75% of our juvenile drug abuse, 85% of our youth in prisons, 71% of school dropouts, 90% of homeless and runaway children, and 71% of teen pregnancies are children with limited. They are children with limited or no contact with one of their biological parents. So if we know that, the question is, why do we still have a public policy that allows the courts to restrict kids to limit it to no time with one parent? And so some people say, well, I don't believe those numbers. Well, common sense will tell you that, teaching a child to hate one half of themselves is going to result in the negative behavior. And so the question is saying, if we know this, what can we do about this? And as you mentioned, we have been, our organization have been able to work with and reach out to some of the world-renowned experts in the world. And as you mentioned, they have shared, compiled this data of over 40 studies, almost a quarter million of kids. They compared those kids to shared parenting, that means almost equal time with both parents, compared to kids that only saw one parent 4 to 6 days a month. And common sense tell you this, but now we have scientific data that says those kids with shared parenting, those kids had less behavior problems. They did better in school. They did better in college. Their needs, their basic needs were met.
Yes, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want people to know that it is best for that child to have both of those. They need feminine energy from their mother, and they need the masculine energy from their father. They have to have that in their lives to be balanced, because you want to mold kids into being good human beings. When you deny them one or other of the parents, you are setting something in place that's going to come back, that's going to be detrimental to society. Now, as I say on a lot of my shows, is this right here, and it's not related. Well, it's kind of related to what it is you do, but this is not your lane. But in our the African-American community, that's what I've been trying to stress to people, that we need to be going through organizations like the organization you have before we get to the court system. Because I believe two loving parents, if they came together, they could decide what's best for the child instead of going to court, and then all of a sudden the court starts saying we're in the best interest of the child. Those two parents need to try to work that out before they get to that stage.
Well, you're right, but there's
now, I don't know if y'all do anything. I don't know if the organization does anything like that. Do y'all have any groups that try to, like, mitigate or bring parents together before any filing is filed, you know, to try to prevent even coming into that based upon what we just said, the psychological findings and everything else we know? is there a plan in place, or do you know of any groups who try to talk to couples at their breakup before they do any next move?
Well, that is not the lane that we travel, but we do receive phone calls, and we do know a few counselors, trained mediators that understand family dynamics, the value of kids having both parents. So there are people out there that does that, mediators. But the problem we have is we have trained ourselves that the majority of people, or the system tells you to fight. And even people that do not want to fight, we have, I'll say this, but then I'm not going to direct too much traffic on the imbalance with our training, with our judiciary, but we do have judges and lawyers. They actually create conflict. They do not believe in kids having equal time or maximum time with both their parents. They set in old traditional ways.
But we know this. We know this from we know it's a system that profits off of the conflict, because once you get this conflict going and you can get a case number established, a lot of people don't know that child support and DHR, they fall up under the Social Security Administration, Title IV defunding. The matching funding that they get for these conflicts and to keeping up these conflicts and to ignore visitation, to ignore parental rights and parental alienation, they have to keep this going. That's why when you go to a court, when it comes to like child support, you can't mention parental alienation in there. You can't mention visitation in there. They make you go a whole separate another route to talk about anything. Once they get that case number that's supposedly in the best interest of the child, I would think proper visitation and equal visitation is in the best interest of the child. I would think that having a relationship with the child, like you said, more than a few days a month is best for the child. That's in the best interest of the child. So when we hear all of this, and we know it is a system set up based upon conflict that rewards these cases through Title IV defunding, and we need to get back to putting the kids first, because that's if we're truly all about the kids, then we would do the things that are in the kids' best interest, like equal parenting time.
Right, and you hit on about five, maybe six things, major issues. Of all those, the question is saying, how do you address that? What's the starting point? And what our organization have done, out of all these 20, 30 things that broke, we had to sit down as an organization, as our leaders. We said, what do we want to work on, and what do we think we have the biggest impact? And so what we try to do as an organization is focus strictly on the parent-child relationship, the value of that. So what we have done since 2011, we have been working with our lawmakers, because we are a nation of laws. The current law creates an imbalance. So we have to fix that law to create a balanced starting point. And then with that, we can shift more to what you were saying early. Before parents even go to court, there's no benefit not to sit down and talk, because if we don't agree, the law is saying their only option is to preserve the child relationship with both parents equally. So why spend $20,000 or $30,000 fighting? Because so what we're trying to do is promote equal shared parenting. This past legislative session here in Montgomery. So we have one of our senators out of Northwest Alabama introduce Senate Bill 186, and the name of the bill was the Children's Equal Access. It was not father's rights. It was not mother's rights. It was the Children's Equal Access Act. And what this was going to do is just create a equal starting point to have a dialogue. That means So as a starting point, this bill would have created from an adversarial winner loser to maximum time with both parents. The kids have maximum time. And then if there's issues such as just say child abuse, child neglect, child abandonment, well, we already have laws that address those. So this bill was strictly dealing with when there's two fit parents, what do we do with them? Right now we make the parents fight and spend all the money, and it traumatizes our kids. So what we're trying to do as an organization is educate your listeners on we identify the problem, we talk about the impact on our kids, and now they're spending 80% on action. So what do we mean by action? We got to first educate ourselves that there's no such thing as the best parent. No, mom is not the best parent. Dad is not the best parent. Through the eyes of a child, the child wants both parents. You know, so that's what we're trying to do is change our laws through the legislative process. And then all these other elements, we can address them as a secondary level of trying to fix this broken system. But I think we got to encourage our listeners and the people in Alabama to focus strictly on the value of kids having two parents, because that's a win-win for everyone, you know.
Yes, it certainly is. And it, especially when it touches upon something you said earlier, juvenile delinquency. And I know that I can speak a little bit on that with authority, because I was for a year I was a supervisor at Three Springs Residential Treatment Center down there in Cortland, where I supervised staff and about 50 kids in two different units. We had a sex offender unit and we had a juvenile unit, you know, basically people that was out of control from their parents. And in almost all those cases, very, very few out of those 50 kids, because I remember talking to a social worker about that. The kids that was there when I was there, very few of them had both parents in the home. It was some nasty divorce or something that happened. So that seems like that's when they don't have that relationship with both parents, it seems like that leaves them more susceptible to, you know, drug abuse, crime, and teenage pregnancy, and juvenile delinquency. You know, we had one kid, you know, I can't mention their name and stuff like that, but he had a rich kid because it cost to go there, like $500 or $600 a day. So this kid, his parents had separated, was going through a nasty fight. And the kid, he acted out by going next door and trashing the neighbor's house while they was going on vacation, and threw parties over there. And then they burned the boat down, you know, next door. And he did it, and that was his main thing. There was, you know, his parents were out of control, and so he went out of control. They were so wrapped up in the fight they were having, they didn't notice what this child really needed. The child needed two parents, loving parents there to guide them, and neither one of them was there. They was caught up in their court case and trying to one-up one another, and he struck out to get attention.
Right, and unfortunately, what you just shared, that's it's normal, but it's sad as normal. So the question is saying, what can we do? What can we do differently? And many times as I travel, talk to people, we are taught to focus on what's wrong, and we're an organization. We want to go talk about action. We educate ourselves, we organize, and then we act. And so part of that, with August coming up, August 12th, we have our state meeting, and you know, people that can visit our website at alfra.org and click on the blog, and you'll see August 12th. Meeting announcements at the Hoover Public Library, and we're going to talk about what can we do between now and the next legislative session, which starts January 2018. We want to educate people, we want to organize, build coalitions, and then we want to reach out to our lawmakers to educate them. We want to spend about 5% of the time talking about what's wrong, and then the other 95% is saying, what can we do to make this, to change the law? And I think Alabama can change the entire country, you know.
Yeah, and that takes And that takes people joining the organization, supporting organizations like yours so they can go out and do the work. Me and you had a conversation before the show, you know, and talking about the show, and I was very encouraged about some of the things you was talking about doing with the organization, and I fully support you, and I enjoy being, you know, a member. I just came on board, and I just think it's just time for an organization like this to address that issue. Like I tell people, everybody has a place and a part to play in trying to get, like you said, all these complaints addressed. And I love the way, the direction that the Alabama Family Rights Association is going in. Now, how can people help the organization? How can they contact you, contact the organization, and learn more about it?
Well, you can visit, you can go to our website, which is alfra.org. And we have a contact tab there. We have a blog tab. We even have a take action tab saying what you can do. And if you don't do anything else today, mark your calendar for August the 12th and plan on attending our state meeting. That way we're going to talk about what can we do, action steps. We also on Facebook, you know, look up the Alabama Family Rights Association. Go to our Facebook page, like us there. And I just want to just say we're making progress. From 2011 to now, we have made major progress. And I think when we as citizens, when we see injustice, I think we should take active steps, especially when it's dealing with kids being pretty much traumatized. And so, like I said, I appreciate you having me on your show here this afternoon. And I just want to encourage your listeners, go to our website page. Go to our Facebook page, and we would like to travel to the cities and have information meetings in different cities throughout the state also.
Oh, definitely, yeah. That's another thing I wanted to ask you about. Do y'all do a lot of that, going out and talking to different communities, and how can I definitely want to do some things with you because, like I said, I've been working in this activist community with a lot of different other groups. And they have talked about doing things like that. Now that I know that you actually are doing it, what would I have to do or anybody would have to do to get y'all to come down? I know they would get the venue, the spot and all that. Do they have to get with you and make some type of put out some type of a plan on what you plan to address? Or is this just going to be about the organization itself and a sign up or something like that?
Well, if you go to our website and you click on the Take Action, you have a sublink that says schedule a town hall or information meeting. And as you mentioned, the first thing is you find a location, whether it's a library conference room or a business conference room, and then reach out to us through our contact link. And then we will lock in a date. And the presentation is going to be short about Alpha, short about what the problem is, and a whole lot of saying, what can we do to fix the problem? So I think we got to shift our mindset from – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask. Yeah, we got to shift our mindset from just the problems to action plans to fix these problems. But as you go to these places, are you just doing – like you said, I know at every place you're going to talk about the organization, but do you ever tailor your message – for the specific area? Say we got a lot of teenage pregnancies in one area. Do you tailor your message to fit the people who invite you to speak, or you just got one set of things that you go along?
Well, that's a good question. No, we have to tailor. We have a standard information guide that we follow, but based on what party line we're talking to and the audience, we would tailor that. I think you have to in order to be effective, you know. So if you're talking to kids, the only thing they should know is that they was born to be loved. They should be allowed to love both parents. Versus if you're talking to a group of college students, and adults, our message will be a little more in detail about the traumatic experience. But once again, it goes back to the action steps. But we definitely can tailor our presentation to the audience, but the bottom line is we have a family law practice that's imbalanced. It's harming our kids, and we want to reach out and educate people, saying what can we do about that, and then share about the benefits, and then action steps.
Yeah, I would tell you what I would like to see that you don't may have heard this before. I know there's one group, Facebook group, it's called the Pro Se Alliance. They do a lot of issues. They're mainly on custody. They don't do anything else. I would like to see organizations or a complete organization of lawyers or an organization who has a wing of lawyers who also try to go out and also have people in the courts. Because take, for instance, in Morgan County, when someone goes to court for the child support, they have a guy there that works with, you know, helping people find a job. Okay, if they have that, then, you know, and that helps their best interest. It helps them to accomplish what they, you know, what the goal is to provide for the child. But like I said, all the focus is on the money and not the personal relationship. I think they should have someone there that represents an organization like yours to see,
right,
you know, just to come back and look. And I don't know if they do it, but I've said this for over 15 years. They should just have somebody in all these courts and just see how people are treated, how non-custodials. It's not a male-female thing. If you're non-custodial, you're going to get some rough treatment in family court. It's going to be rough because the judge sitting up there and those social workers over there, their money, that's their retirement. That's their 401k.
Right.
That's the organization's contract with the government. So I would love to see somebody in there. And just you know, not to give any legal advice, but I like to see some social scientists in some of these courtrooms just to observe how some of these – now, you can have some narcissistic parents, but there are some very sensitive places where DHR is breeding narcissistic social workers. I mean, I've been treated bad in the court, but I have seen people treated 10 times as worse as me. You know, I mean,
right.
I get talked to like a dog. I was told, I'm just going to put this out there. It's no Jerry Springer type stuff. It's real life that happened. I had a caseworker in Morgan County. She'd done several terrible things over the years, but asked me how was my health. You know, I'd suffered a severe heart attack, got 3 stents. Before I could get 3 words out, she cut me off and was telling me about her cousin who had a heart attack like I did and got 2 stents, but, you know, I had 3 stents. But she said that he's okay, he's doing this and this. And I'm like, we're 2 different people. Our bodies are different. You see what I'm saying? And so I thought
right.
that was very rude to cut me off. It's just like dismissed my health issue. And then I was even told this. Even though this shaped on me, and I'm not going to divulge all the health part of it, but she was like, you think we're going to sit back and wait on your disability? I mean, it's just talk like that. You know, people get – I can take it because I got a thick skin. I've been doing this grassroots stuff, but I'm just amazed. And I studied sociology and psychology in school. There is a very serious problem going on in these local courtrooms where non-custodial parents, both male and female, are getting treated so inhumane and getting verbally abused. And legal
right,
abuse, bringing somebody back to court every 3 months. It's legal abuse. But
right,
I would just like, I know
like
that's
the,
not your lane, but like I said, I just wish some social scientists would come together and maybe do it undercover. Just go in there and sit at different places and just observe the verbiage, just the interaction between these judges and these caseworkers toward the non-custodial parent. I mean, it's appalling. It's disgusting to think that this is America and people are allowed to treat people who are already, you know, hauled in before court, probably in mounds of debt, probably being hit with that interest that goes straight back to them, and they get talked to like a dog. I mean, it's sad. So I'm glad to see
right.
organizations like the Alabama Family Rights Association out there trying to make sure that people get equal parenting time with their child, because we got a problem in the community with our kids out of control. And if you look at it, a lot of these kids are missing one or the other parent. And a lot of things can be solved by equal time before it reaches a level that we send somebody to the prison industrial complex. I feel like it's, you know, it's all like the system knows what it's doing. They're creating these desperate situations that's going to repeat and repeat. You know, we got younger and younger people seeing getting pregnant and getting out of the house and getting your own part as a way to get away from their parents, to be their own, to be grown before really they're ready. I mean, you get a child 16 or 17 rebel against their parents, they can get out of there. If they run away, they're going to go to juvie. You know, the best way they get out of there these days, hey, have a baby. I get a free house, free food, free medical. Only thing I got to do is just sort of like turn somebody up, make them the target of the people collecting the Title 40 funds. But yes, I would encourage people to join organizations like this today. It's really great seeing this out there. I was, you know, I was surprised. I never knew nothing about it. I've been doing this type of activism for years, and then I seen the Facebook page, and I was like, let me go check them out. And I checked it out, and I followed you guys, what y'all were doing with SB 136, which that's still alive, right?
186.
Yeah, yeah, 186.
No,
it's still alive, right? Or it's got to be reintroduced.
It have to be reintroduced come for the January 2018 legislative session there. And you hit on some very, I mean, everything you're saying, you spot on. And
yeah, because I live it.
Right. And here's the thing is, many times people, they call, they email, they text, and they say, let me tell you my story, you won't believe it. And I said, I can tell your story before you even tell your story. I said, but you have a three-hour version, I have a 30-second version. I said, you live in Alabama, you're loving parents. You have a child, you have a limited amount of time with your child, and you lack for that. You lack for the change, the law to be changed. They're like, well, yeah, that's my story. I said, now your details is different, but that's everybody's story that reach out to our organization. And my point with that is, on our website, we have a tab that says tell your story, because we want people to tell their story. But once again, we have shifted to action, you know, because you and I, we could talk for 2 or 3 hours about our story. The details is different, but the outcome is the same. So we, before anybody outside changes, before the behaviors in the courts change, we got to educate ourselves so we can change our dialogue. And then that way, we spend 5% on what's wrong. And then the majority of the time talk about what can we do to fix it, action steps.
Yeah.
One of the things we're going to have on August the 12th, we're going to have a special presenter is going to talk about how to build a relationship up with your legislators, even if you don't like them, because there's no way around it. You got to go through the legislative process
and
in order to change the law.
And what you said hits everything on the head, because you have to be able to talk with both sides, because both sides are the ones who are allowing these things to take place. So you have to reach them. And even me, you know, I do a lot in the political, and I got, you know, some people politically that we, you know, we're doing it for the people. We're both putting both of our sides and ideas and views out, you know, but they're, even though we don't agree on certain things, I'm willing to work with people on the other side of the aisle or the other side of anything if we have something else in common. Okay, that take this issue like with me and the Democrats. I have never been a supporter of abortion, even before I got involved in politics. I was against it very young. Nobody influenced me. I just took a look at it and said, hey, this is wrong. Because how can two people come together and co-create a life, but one person have the power to end that life? They shouldn't be able to do that. In Alabama, you should be able to, across the states, if a woman wants to have an abortion and she don't want that baby, they always go back to, well, it's her body, but she's not the creator. She has something that 50% belongs to someone else. If she wants an abortion and he doesn't, she should have to have that child because she did not create that child by herself. She should have to have that child, but she should be fully absolved of any financial responsibility. If a guy wanted her to keep his co-creation, she should be absolved of it.
there should be two people making this decision. And when we get away from co-creators in life, we're wrong. We automatically jump to where it's her body. But we never start at the starting point where a real human being with common sense would start. Is it takes two. There is a co-creator of this life. Two people are co-creators. So we got to a point where one person can end the creation. And to me, that's just foolish. We got out of the way. We lost our way somewhere. And we need to get back to the very basic thing of being co-creators, co-parents, which goes back to shared parenting time. But I just want to put that out there. But it's been great having you on the show, and we'd love for you to come back. I would love for, like I said, I got time that I would give to an organization. I give time to some organizations, just like I did the Child Support Hustle.com, that we do a show on here every Saturday. People that are fighting the cause, I have free radio time for you to get your message out. Don't cost you nothing. You just call into the show and put whatever message that you have out there. And I'm looking for groups, anybody that want to do anything like that. So you're welcome to come back anytime to update us, especially we need to keep up with SB 186.
Well, Marcus, I definitely,
and I hope y'all reintroduce it, you know, in this next term. I really do.
Well, I tell you what, the senator and several of the co-sponsors, the only way that they will stay on board if we get more people involved, and I truly believe we can make a difference. Earlier I was saying I think we can change our country. This is how. If when one state makes a change, 7 to 8 years later, three-quarters of the country will follow. Right now we're following some really bad stuff, but I think in Alabama, we could promote the value of family, the value of kids, and then hopefully the rest of the country will follow. You know, so once again, I appreciate you having me on, and want to encourage your listeners, please visit our website at alfra.org and Facebook page, Alabama Family Rights Association, and mark your calendar for August 12th. And join our efforts. I think certain things we're fighting for, and I think our kids is definitely one of those. So definitely thank you for having me on here.
Yes, they are. And I just want to encourage people just going through this, that's having a hard time dealing with it. You know, that's why you join organizations like this. You know, it's an active organization, but it's also part of your healing and part of your support. Will be groups like this. You know, I know there's a lot of people out there feeling frustrated because I hear it all the time, and I know where they're coming from. I've been there, but that's why I transferred my grievances and my situation into some type of activism. Get active, people. Get in touch with these organizations and become a part of it. It can help you heal, and you also can be a part of change. It was great having you on, Mr. Pascal, and we'll be keeping up with you, and we'll be sharing everything that you're doing. And I just really appreciate grassroots and organizations like yours doing the work.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
cigarette desires to see it. So I was gonna leave, but she looked at me and said,